Thank you. So, then let's come back to our text. And very quickly, as you have seen maybe, there was one first page we had nothing to do with the rest. It was just intended to situate the dialogue and to pick up some themes. For example, the theme of the voyage. No? That's to say, the protagonist of because the story is that a voyager, a sea captain, meets a knight of the hospitalier. Mm-hmm. And illustrates his experience. Mm-hmm. And he says he has got to the city of the sun in a very, very far away place, this Taprobana, which is Ceylon, more or less. Mm-hmm. I grew up like that. And the idea was to show you couple of things which are very important to understand the whole background. For example, here the voyager is speaking about the natives, yes. And you can understand how shocking it was also to see that there are other men with other religions. Mm-hmm. There was a long disputation, are they really men? Are they half men? What are they? They don't speak our language. For Campanella, they speak our language, and they are not taught in the old languages, but in the modern languages, and they share the responsibility of the translations, so that there are groups in the city who know different languages in order to be able to speak with everyone.
Mm-hmm. How was the Italian of those days? I mean, is this?
The Italian of those days had been reformed by Bembo, who was a purist, who said that you had to write imitating the three big poets, Dante, Petrarca, and Boccaccio. But this kind of... there was then a long controversy about was it really this or was it the Florentine or was the a sort of common language. And in fact, for example, those who vulgarized the works of Aristotle often speak of a common language, a common Italian, which is a sort of mishmash of different kinds of language, because you must remember that Italian was politically divided, and the dialogue, the dialects were very different. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so there really wasn't an Italian which was spoken all around Italy. Mm-hmm. And these kind of authors are not so fond in the idea of imitating and of being purist. They rather are very creative, and you have seen certainly with Bruno, he uses words that are also for us Italian a little hot.
Yes,
absolutely. Exactly. No? And they are somehow also in search of a new language to renew philosophy also in a linguistic sense. To have a vernacular philosophy born as vernacular philosophy. which is not only for the professional doctors of the university. It's much more for the acculturated people. And one important thing in this first page is also you see at the end the city is divided into seven large circuits named after the planets. Yeah? Yes. And this idea of connecting the life and planets is very comes out from Ficino, who had the idea in that you could use the planets to have an influence into your life, a good influence in your life. And so they are constructing the building, the town as a planetary town. Another very important thing is that they are writing the content of knowledge on the walls, so that you can go through the city and you have this immediate impact. You must consider the sight is considered the most direct sense, and so you get really involved if you see things and if you see things around you. So I would go to the second page. And what did you find interesting, let's say?
It's quite similar to other utopian writing. Like if you think, it's very organized, very centrally controlled, very fixed around the virtues and an official for each virtue.
Absolutely.
Nothing is left
to the chance.
To chance, exactly. For the individual.
Absolutely. They would probably say because you are asked to be the real man. You are getting the best, so there is no other way. But I found it. There are interesting things. They have also everything in common, for example, and they don't give gifts. I think that, which is then also indirectly a sort of accusation to the real world, where everything has
its price.
Is given has its price,
and even in the church,
even in the church.
It's quite interesting that both sexes are trained in all pursuits, so it's quite equal at a time when in Italy. The relations between the sexes weren't equal.
And you have probably be able to see the difference with the last part of Bruno's. We will speak about that with Bruno. And but yes, it's very Platonic. Everything is in common. Both sex are on the same level. Plato was not so. I don't think Plato would agree. But the children are in common, and there is a central teaching curriculum, let's say. And I would come to the teaching, where also both sexes are taught, and Campanella says there is a theoretical teaching, But there is also the running, the going out, the playing in the nature, because the man must also understand real life, must be trained in the crafts, must be trained in natural sciences. Here the idea is that there is no point of considering culture a mere literal culture. Culture is not made out of books. Culture is made out of experience, of thinking, of looking at the world, which is a very important issue for all this kind of anti-Aristotelian. They say we must reform knowledge in the sense that we don't need a knowledge only based on books and comments on what someone else has written. We need to build up a knowledge which is a first-hand knowledge, which is a fake, because they are all using them, other authors. But I mean, the perspective is different. It's something much more practical, open to the praxis. And it will become more and more open to the practice. And I would say it's quite interesting how the analysis of the scenes of the real world comes out from the text, because look at page 43, for example, what he says against nobility. He says, here, nobility is real nobility. It's not as in our world, where nobles are just noble because they are noble in the society. Yeah, it's not a tradition, it's not a blood tradition. It's something that you must live in first person. And there are also somehow a mix, this mixed between a humanistic perspective, because he says we must learn history, we must learn all, for example, the ceremonies, the forms of government, which is a sort of antiquarian interest of what was in the past, together with mechanical arts, which is a very particular combination of knowledge. And then he says, 45, we don't need to spend much time in learning the language ourselves everywhere, because we have translators, which is a very modern idea, I think. Yeah? And this is a general issue, meaning that culture is changing. It's not only grammar, it's something else. And another very important point is that he says, the Hospitalier says, but they're speaking about the teaching, and they say, when someone knows better than someone else, then he gets the rule in the city. And the Hospitalier says, anyone who gives his attention to the science cannot know how to rule. And the voyagers say, no, it's the contrary. The learned man is exactly the one who has to rule, which is a very Platonic idea. The idea of being a philosopher and ruler. And then if you see at the end of the page, when he speaks about Aristotle's grammar or logic, He says that knowledge will requires only servile memory and is deprived the mind of vitality because it meditates upon books instead upon things. Mm-hmm. This is for them, yes, the Aristotelian knowledge. Mm-hmm. Okay? And so the opposition is things and books, and on the other side, things and words. Mm? You don't. You must not care too much about words. You must care about things. Mm-hmm. You have not to care about only reading books. You have to care about things. And which is the same that is saying the page 47. He said, anyone trained through books in one science alone is really worthless and ignorant. Mm-hmm. So there is also this idea of omnicomprehensive logic. You cannot be good in one field if you don't know the complex of the knowledge. Hmm?
Now, what's the word, omni?
Omnicomprehensive.
Okay.
I think you say omnicomprehensive. You say it?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. No?
Yeah, it's fine. I understand it.
Yes.
But we're checking on Google.
That's comprehensive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Comprehensive in the sense of
comprehensive. Yeah.
That's nice. It's an Italian word. Omnicomprensivo. Yeah. 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 The city is ruled by a metaphysic. A man who has the whole knowledge. Then he has three officials, which are the power, the knowledge, and the love. Mm? And these three officials must be philosophers, historians, naturalists, and humanists. But humanists in the good sense. Mm? So they must care about man, and things, and must be very open, and but must have a much more complete experience as a just bookish one. Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you have any particular question about this? In general.
I was interested in the bit on page 43. The one who knows the greatest number of skills and practices, and practices them best, is judged to have the greatest nobility. Thus they laugh at us because we consider craftsmen as noble and assign nobility to those who are ignorant of every craft and live in idleness. And there was a particular topic in the Renaissance, wasn't there, about craftsmen not being noble enough, because painting, for instance, a lot of the artists, particularly was it Leonardo who wrote about this, there was a sort of saying, well, painting is better than sculpture, and an artist,
absolutely,
you know, so. It's just one of the things that was going on at the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, in fact, it's the same problem as with medicine. Mm. The medicine is a noble knowledge until it hasn't anything to do with the practicality.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. And this was a problem, and it was really something which had to be changed, and in a sense the new science will do that, to consider knowledge as something that you can put in use in your experience. And also then this gives the opportunity of giving another relevance to the crafts and to the manual working somehow, also in terms of picture or sculpture or these kind of things. Yeah, it's very important.
Was this written in any sense to suggest an ideal society to rulers at the time, or was it simply a theoretical perfect society?
No. I think me and many more think that maybe in these terms it was here ideal, but the struggling for a real reform of the society was there, and he wanted to change. He wanted to change the hierarchies, to change the curriculum of studies. In a way that, in a way to create a complete man.
So it wasn't just interpreting the world that he wanted
to change.
No.
He was in prison at this time. Exactly.
Oh, exactly. Yes. No, when he wrote this one, I think it was he was out. But he had. He was 20 years.
Yeah.
And he was in prison because he had organized a revolution, a revolt.
The interesting thing was that I read a little bit about him online, and he was taken up by the King of France.
Yeah.
And that was a Catholic country.
Yeah.
But his ideas obviously were acceptable. I think it was Cardinal Richelieu who brought him to France. I was only going to say, as a Catholic country like Italy, it sounds as though from that, as if ideas were more acceptable in France, new ideas, but perhaps not.
But France had his problems. But I don't know really if France was really ready to accept something. But for example, also Bruno went to Spain, to France, and he worked for the king, and certainly for a monk and an ex-monk, it was very important to have someone who was supporting him. Mm-hmm. And Campanella wrote political writings and prophecies, meaning at the beginning that France could be the new force to get to renew Europe and to renew Christianism and everything. Mm. So maybe that's also a point. But then it changed. So it was very, and he had not so much luck in France too. Yeah, he came back then. But yes, certainly out of Rome you have more chances than Rome. Mm-hmm. And he was in Neapolis and in Rome, imprisoned. So.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, other? Let me try. I think of me, I had to really engage in reading it in English. I was working with the vocabulary very much. But, okay, let's begin with what had happened. Bruno was also a Dominican monk. And he had from the beginning problems, and he decided then to not really to leave the order, but it wasn't possible for him to find a collocation in Italy. So he began to travel around Europe, and at this time, likely before this time, he had the chance of working for the France, the France ambassador in England. So he came with him to London. And in fact, this dialogue, which is said to be published in Venice, is published in London. Okay? In Italian. Thanks to Florio and Sidney and all the marvelous people there. And as you have seen, it's a sort of apology and a vengeance at the same time, this first dialogue, which is the first of the five dialogues of the Cause, Principle and Unity, which is the dialogue in which Bruno really explains a new doctrine of matter, completely anti-Aristotelian.
So it's called the Five Dialogues of
The Cause, Principle and Unity.
Yeah, thank you.
And what had happened? Bruno had come to England with the ambassador and was invited to Oxford when a prince, a Polish prince, was there. So, and he was appointed for a number of lectures, which he gave. And the lectures were about the immortality of the soul. And but in fact also on the new cosmological idea of Copernicus. And what he said was really not welcome in Oxford at all. And the Chancellor of Oxford tried to help him, saying just that he was a plagiarist and that he had spoken using too much of the works of Ficino, and so the cycle of lectures was stopped, and there was a quite hard reaction by the doctors of Oxford and by Bruno himself too. So when he wrote the first of his dialogues, which is the Ashes Wednesday, explaining really the doctrine of Copernicus, there was a very harsh reaction by the doctors of Oxford and in general also by the court. Because in fact he was considered an arrogant, which he was. And somehow there was really what is clear also in this first dialogue. There was a sort of contraposition: England, Aristotelianism, old university, and Italian humanism, Copernicus, and new way of thinking. There was another problem. In England there were the Puritans, and the Puritans didn't want the universities to keep studying the old medieval commentators, Scotto, for example, which were papist in their perspective. So there was really a very complicated situation, which led to a fight between Bruno and the Oxonian.
Was there an issue that Bruno was a Catholic and Oxford by that time was Protestant?
But assuming in which sense?
Well,
in terms
of accepting what he said, and was he considered a representative of the Catholic Church as a Dominican,
I don't think so. Not really Catholic in this sense, because he had been he was really not a monk in the sense of a monk,
right.
Yeah, because he was traveling through Europe in all Protestant places, in countries, in Switzerland, in Geneva, in Zurich, he will go to Germany, and so I don't think Papist was the problem.
Right.
Yeah?
Yeah,
I think much more. It was also an attitude, I think, which was a little bit contrasting between the two. Yeah, I would say because we don't have so much time, we come at the other thing which had happened, as I said, was the publication of the first of the dialogues, where the Wednesday, Ash Wednesday, where Bruno explained the doctrine, the theories of Copernicus, in a very, very impacting way. And the problem with Bruno was that for him, Copernicus was not only a mathematical hypothesis, but it was a physical hypothesis. And much more, it was not only Copernicus, his point, he was he considered the universe infinite. So he destroyed the idea of the spheres, which gave the possibility in the Ptolemaic model of motion of the planets. So the motion of the planets was connected to the spheres, and he said that our Copernican system is just one of the infinite solar systems in the universe. So it's to say we have no last sphere. You know, Ptolemy spoke about a last sphere of the fixed stars. There is no such a sphere. All the stars are moving because they have a soul. And the soul is part of the soul of the world, which is part of the soul of the of God, more or less. In the sense that there is really one reality, one truth, which is in a sense implicitly everything, and which comes out from time to time in different forms. And that's what the cosmos in general is, and what every single thing is in the world, which is something quite hard, yeah, to understand and to accept. And so, as he says in the Ashes Wednesday, there was a dispute between him and two Oxford doctors at table, being invited by the ambassador, with the ambassador to another important member of the court, of the Elizabethan court. Okay, and so he's now trying to give an excuse to say it was not my intention to say anything against England, the court, Oxford, and something like that. It was really my research of the truth which led me to dispute with you. Mm-hmm. And the sense of his reaction is exactly in the same perspective as by Campanella. We don't want only to study books. We don't want to study things that have been said by others. We want to open our eyes and try to understand the world. In fact, it's just using other authors. Because, for example, as most of these anti-Aristotelians, natural philosophers of the 16th century, they are using, for example, the pre-Socratics. Mm-hmm. Or philosophers that are not in the canonic
in the canon, I said.
Yeah, exactly. It's something else, but one shouldn't think that Bruno is a super modern author in every aspect. Mm? He certainly is something new. He wants something new. He wants really a change in philosophy and also in the politics and also in society. But the tools are Renaissance tools. Hmm? We shouldn't think Bruno is completely the man of the new science. Okay, it was very important. This book, Frances Yates. She wrote about Bruno as a magus. As a magician, and but it was the one of the seminal books toward the philosophical analysis of Bruno, because Bruno was thought to be either a victim and a standard of the free thinking, or an heretical, or or a writer. And with these kind of books, we began to think about the text and to see the complexity of the construction and the importance also of the philosophical discourse of Bruno. And to understand how, I gave you the whole dialogue, because I wanted you to know how he writes, which is really impressive. And if you have the last part, it's really even more impressive, because not only because he speaks about this idea of the folly, of the madness, and he gives the key of his writing, saying he's writing a satire, no? Or satire?
Satire.
Satire. Satire. A satire, mm? Like Menippus was, and in fact Luciano was, no? And this was a genre very, very diffused in the Renaissance and in the second part of the Renaissance also. But then he describes the pedant, so the grammar school teacher, who Bruno thinks is the real problem at the moment, because he's really an obstacle to the growth of knowledge. And then he introduces this quite peculiar part about masculine and feminine, mm-hmm. no? Beginning with which is much more difficult to be understood in English, because not all the words are.
I thought so.
Either yes. feminine or. Yes. In Italian, you have every positive word is feminine, and every negative word is masculine. For once. No, but it's not. Yeah. No, it's not. It's just to show you the way in which. Bruno is working, because beginning with this accusation to the humanists, he comes to a praise of the feminine. Mm-hmm. And the praise of the feminine becomes the praise of Elizabeth,
yes.
And the praise of England somehow, yes. But the cause, this dialogue contains a very important part in which, as I said, Bruno investigates the nature of matter, and he says that Aristotle has a feminine idea of matter, in the sense that Aristotle thinks that matter is nothing until the forms arise, and the form is masculine. Mm-hmm. Now, Bruno says, in fact, this is a very bad idea of the matter. Matter cannot be alone without forms. Mm-hmm. So the real matter is the womb of the women, with all the forms in it, forms that in the time come out. Yeah. So as I said before, the reality is really one. Matter and form are together, are always together, and in fact it's very difficult to distinguish between what is really corporeal and what is really spiritual, because matter and forms are always together. We don't know any situation in which matter is alone and form is alone. And that's the error of Aristotle. No? Now, if you say something like that, which is the main problem you have to cope with?
You have to prove it.
You have to prove it, but the idea of proving is something which is not so clear by the time. if it functions from a logical point of view, it's proved, more or less. But what about man? Bruno wasn't a Catholic, I would say. Not so much. But was a Christian. And it wouldn't accept that the soul is something that doesn't that isn't that doesn't continue in eternity. So this was a very complicated point. If you say that body and soul are not always together, or are always together, and what he proposed as a solution, I think, is much more difficult than the problem, because he thinks of a metempsychosis. So the fact that souls continue to travel in different type of bodies, so different sections of matter, until the last end of the world. So I say, if you ask if the Inquisition was right in considering Bruno an heretic, I would say yes, they were right. He's not a real... It's doctrine, his doctrine is really not an orthodox one, absolutely. Which doesn't mean that they were right in condemning him to fire. That's another problem. The way they arranged the relationship with different doctrines was a little bit hard. But Bruno was saying really something which was not conceivable within the framework of the Catholic or Christian Orthodox way of thinking. Yeah, I would say. I'm afraid I was too optimistic about the time. So do you have any specific at least question about the text?
Can I just ask one more general question? Copernicus was Polish?
Yeah.
Was he? So how did the Italian humanists, how did they know what he was writing, and they, how did they become so familiar with it, if in England the Oxford academics didn't know anything?
I don't think they didn't know anything. I think they were
they
not...
They rejected it.
Yeah, I think so. But on the same, at the same time, I think that our idea of doctrines being spread in Europe is quite different from the reality. They hadn't any internet, they had bad post, they had a lot of problems, but they were really in contact. If you look at the correspondences between the humanists or the philosopher in the 16th century, they write a lot, they stay all the day at writing, and they really exchange ideas. They exchange books, they exchange objects, for example. There is, for example, in Basel, a huge collection of letters of philosopher of the 16th century. And you read, they were also interested in botanic, for example, and they send seeds, or they send little stones, because they have found a stone, a particular one, which is said to have particularly characteristics, and they send them. And they use this very complicated system of sending, because they were people traveling all around. But they are perfectly organized. So what we think it was a closed world, was in fact maybe more open than our is because they were speaking about things. So they're really exchanging opinions.
And using Latin as a common language?
Yeah, yeah, this was the advantage of Latin, which was a European language. All the philosophers, all the acculturated people were bilingual. They had their own language and Latin, and Greek also, sometimes. But it is interesting, they also write in Italian, because Italian was a European language. Italian was was spoken at the court in England. Italian was spoken also, for example, in Switzerland and Germany, because Padova was a very huge university, and most people coming from Poland, from Germany, from I think not so much from England, but from Switzerland and so on, or from France, were studied in Padova, and so they learned Italian. It was very, very, interesting to find this And so yes, I think we should redefine sometimes our idea of the world of the past, because we think we are so
wonderful,
so wonderful, so perfect, so open, so and we. Don't success in what they succeed, what they manage to do, and so yeah. Okay. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you.
I have a lovely letter with Rachel. Thank you very much. No, I think it's only when she has visitors. I think I'm coming every week.
You said you thought for months.
Yeah, no, I think it's happening on the
You've got the sheet.